Earth and Sky.
A partnership approach to risk management that includes scientists, policymakers, cultural leaders, businessmen and women, and representatives of community groups might indeed be a very complex, perhaps the most complex tool that we have in our risk management toolbox, but it's also potentially the most effective.
You're listening to Honolulu social scientist Melissa Finucane, an expert on how people come to perceive and act on environmental risks. And this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Finucane spoke with Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl about her work on the islands of the Pacific. If climate scientists are correct, and climate changes dramatically in this century, the Pacific region might be particularly vulnerable to risks. For example, weather extremes such as drought.
Why is this field needed? What do you know about the way humans perceive and manage risk that most of us don't?
Well, this field of risk perception and decision research was established about 40 years ago now. And it was established in response to real-life, regularly recurring conflicts that people were observing between scientists and technocrats who were doing technical estimates or analyses of risk, and community groups who often disagreed with their assessments of those risks. And it's needed because it has help to explain why those differences exist.
So I do want to talk about environmental risks, especially climate risk, which I think is a specialty of yours. What exactly constitutes climate risk?
In the Pacific region, we have about 30,000 islands spread across a very wide geographic area. We're spread across five different time zones. We lie on both sides of the equator and both sides of the international dateline. So trying to articulate concisely what climate risks mean in this very vast region is quite difficult. If you add on top of that the uncertainty that still exists in many climate models, then we are indeed in conditions of great uncertainty. But nonetheless, I think that there is some consensus at this point suggesting that what we're facing are warmer air temperatures, changes in rainfall patterns, which might mean more heavy rain events and more flooding, or it might mean more drought, more severe hurricanes or tropical cyclones, increased ocean temperatures and acidity, and certainly changes in sea level, which in the short term might just mean variability in sea level, but in the long term likely means sea level rise.
How is science telling you about how people are behaving right now in the face of climate change, how that needs to change, how that needs to be addressed, how people need to be spoken to about it?
So, for instance, in the climate context, a climate modeler might have information that suggests that we're facing sea level rise. Town planners might take that information and map out areas where they anticipate there being a greater threat to some communities than others, so they have a clear indication of where the problem lies. And yet when they take that information to communities and make their recommendation that homes or infrastructure needs to be moved back from the coastline, they might receive some pushback and perhaps a demand for an alternate course of action, such as the building of a seawall, even though other studies might have shown that seawalls might cause more erosion in the long term, or that perhaps they're not the most effective or safest route to pursue.
I'm assuming that climate risk perception or risk perception is different across nations, cultures. Exactly how can you give examples? What's the evidence?
Okay, so and maybe we'll talk about PRIMO. Pacific Risk Management Ohana is a partnership approach to trying to build resilience in Pacific Island communities through a collaborative partnership that involves a number of key types of stakeholders from institutions locally, regionally, nationally in the Pacific. People from all different walks of life that are stakeholders. They have an interest in seeing that their communities are resilient to, in this case, climate risks, but other hazards as well. In the 2009 annual meeting of PRIMO. We held it out in Guam. We had people from the Federated States of Micronesia presenting to us about a recent experience they'd had. In December of 2008, they experienced an inundation event that led to wave overwash of low-lying islands. So a lot of seawater, saltwater, inundated the islands. And this significantly damaged their agricultural lands, caused damage to their homes and much of their infrastructure, and contaminated their well water. Perhaps there was information that meteorologists somewhere else in the region had that could have helped them prepare better for the events. And indeed, in the audience, there were meteorologists and other scientists who said, oh, you know what, in fact, we are able to generate models or forecasts that perhaps could have helped you. And through that discussion, they were able to identify what information they had available, what they could generate that would be specifically useful to the communities that were most at risk. Others could identify or assess the technologies and social systems in those particular contexts that perhaps would or would not facilitate the transfer of that information and make recommendations about how best that might occur. And then those who were impacted could indicate whether they thought that that would be helpful or not in both preparing for future inundation events, but also in helping the recovery efforts from the December 2008 event. Interactions like these, where you have multiple different stakeholders talking about what they know, what their expertise is, we build trust and build relationships, essentially, among people that can help each other build resilience to these hazards that we face.
Okay, so how does your science or your brand of science facilitate the proper communication between parties?
So in my own work, I've looked at drought risk perceptions across the Hawaiian Islands. And in particular, I tried to focus on the social and cultural impacts that drought has in this area. And the methods I used were interview techniques or qualitative methods. I like in-depth interviews because they allow people to respond in a way that is not constrained by previously determined survey responses, you know, like multiple choice options, for instance. But it's also more compatible with the local tradition that we call talk story, in which people convey what's important to them, what experiences they've had through narratives and storytelling. I asked people how they prepared for drought, and many said they didn't have a drought plan, and others said that they were very precise about how they determined what they would do at specific levels of drought. And then I asked them what kind of information they used to determine their drought plans or their drought management responses. And some people were very analytic in their approach. They accessed information that's available, for instance, on the web through the U.S. Drought Monitor. Others, however, tended to be much more experiential. They were really relying on their practical experience or knowledge that's been handed down generation after generation. And so a practical implication of that is that we need to perhaps have a multi-pronged approach when we're trying to communicate risk or develop risk management strategies or help people develop risk drought plans in this case. In that technical information is certainly vital. It's key for robust, sound decision-making. But perhaps it needs to be complemented with a more natural approach to communicating risk information. A more narrative approach in this case might be helpful if we could capture and articulate some of those narratives about the experiences at different levels of drought across the islands and what people suggest needs to be done. It might help others think in a more natural way about developing drought plans to make them more resilient to this kind of problem.
You've been listening to social scientist Melissa Finucane in Honolulu. She works with the organization PRIMO, which stands for Pacific Risk Management Ohana. The word ohana indicates a special Hawaiian sense of extended family and strong community ties. PRIMO brings together scientists, community members, and other experts to help Pacific communities manage natural and human-caused risks. Our thanks today to NOAA Pacific Services Center. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.